Thank you, Jorge, and thank you for attending. Actually, I'll talk a lot about tools, but I'll also try to put it in the broader context of humans and mindsets as we discussed this morning. And I'll do it mostly through two examples of work that we're doing related to soil health and adaptive nitrogen management and some of the challenges that we have actually experienced with that. So, you know, this morning you heard or saw a definition of adaptive management that's broader. I was thinking about, and I wouldn't call this a definition, I would call it a description, of sort of how you operationally do adaptive management. And I think a key word here is localized information on the resource base, how the system performs, experience, and science. Science is more where we're coming from. The experience is probably where the grower really comes in. So why adaptive management from my perspective? Because there are a lot of site-specific characteristics related to soils, the farm, the farmer especially, for example, their attitude to change and risk, management history. We've seen that, for example, in New York, we've seen grain and livestock farms becoming very different. The soils are dramatically different. I'll show you some examples of that. And then we have a wonderful set of new tools available, whether that's yield monitors or weigh wagons. A lot of interesting new soil and tissue tests, models, optical sensors, or even perhaps, you know, farm nutrient balances that we're now conducting. Caroline, very good. So I'll talk about two examples. One is related to soil health, and we actually had some interesting experience related to that. So we started a project. This is with colleagues at Cornell, and it's actually kind of an interdisciplinary effort. But the main idea was to in addition to the sort of the chemical emphasis that has been placed on soil management, to really bring in the physical and especially the biological component of soil functioning. And so we developed a test, and we've presented that elsewhere, that basically has a number of indicators, four physical indicators, four biological indicators, and a number of chemical indicators. The chemical ones are basically the standard Cornell soil test, but we added biological and physical indicators, physical being blue, biological green. And all of these relate to particular functions, and we very specifically selected these indicators to cover the range of all important soil processes. For example, aggregate stability relates to aeration, infiltration, shallow rooting, crusting, etc. Okay, so all of those play a particular role. So it's a more holistic assessment of soils. And then you can submit a sample. We've been doing that now for 3 years. You can you pay a fee, and you get a report back like this, where the indicators are indicated here, the physical, biological, and chemical, the measured value, and then an interpretation of that value based on scoring curves. And then that's on a rating from 0 to 100, and then we give it a color coding to help interpret. Okay, so green is good, yellow is intermediate, and red is not so good. This is actually kind of an interesting case. Very typical of what we measured is that for a lot of our farms, the chemical indicators are very well taken care of. They're all green. Farmers know how to manage the nutrients in the soil. The biology and the physics, often not so good. So it's the fact that you're measuring it that makes people aware that they need to do something about it. So we link those results. So if you have constraints, say you have low aggregate stability, you have certain constraints with rooting or infiltration, we link that to management recommendations. So for example, if you have low aggregate stability, we provide some short-term and some long-term management recommendations. For example, bringing in fresh organic materials, cover cropping, et cetera, or reduced tillage, changing rotations, et cetera. So for all of these, and I won't go through the details, we have a set of management recommendations that come with that. But it is a holistic approach. It's not a recipe type of approach. It's not like the traditional soil testing where you basically get an answer. You know, you need to apply 50 pounds per acre of phosphorus. It doesn't quite work that way. So we, in a way, we kind of hit a barrier because we had a nice technical tool, but even with our extension agents, we realized that they were really struggling with this. And we thought, oh, we've done a great job. Isn't this wonderful to have this test? And what we realized is that they had real difficulty with sort of processing that information in a holistic way, because it wasn't a recipe, and that's what people were used to. So one of the things we did, and it's actually fairly simple, and we've used it now for in several workshops, is we basically created a four-step process where we said, okay, you use the information from the soil health test, you identify the constraints, for example, low aggregate stability, you prioritize them, then you look at the management options, which simply is out of the table from the previous slide. So it's almost just copying it, but then it gets into, okay, now let's bring in some of the site-specific information and about the farm and attitude to risk. You know, one farmer might say, I'm willing to change one thing. Give me the one thing that I can change. I'm not going to do radical changes. But there's other ones who are much more open to more integrative, holistic management. But you write those things down. You know, what are the equipment limitations? What is there some other contextual limitation, like a sensitive watershed or so? And then with that, you work with the farmer to work out a management plan, kind of like a whole farm plan. And we've tried this at our workshops, and this really made all the difference. You had that conversation, and you provided a basic process of how you sort of manage the diversity of information that comes out of a soil health test. And I think we're definitely moving in the right direction there. This is our website, if in case you're interested. A lot of we have this all in our soil health training manual. If you want to download that, it's available. Now, the other thing, as a segue to the nitrogen management, this is two soil health test results from two farms. One is a cash grain operation, one is a dairy farm in New York. Very similar soil types, silt loam soils, and very different soil indicators. This cash grain operation, I think, it's 2.1% organic matter. The dairy farm, 6.1% organic matter. What we're starting to see is a huge divergence of soils as it relates to how they're being managed. A field in a dairy farm and a field in a cash grain or a traditional, horticultural vegetable operations, very different. Okay? Organic farms are very different from non-organic farms. And those differences are much greater than the differences that you might see in a soil survey. Okay, so there's a new group on soil change that it's a new working group, society-wide working group that focuses on that, and we should make sure we're in touch with them, because the result of soil change is adaptive management, in my view. Okay, so the second example is on the nitrogen that Jorge already mentioned. This is the work that Jeff Malkonian and I are doing. And just one of the strong justifications, and I think this is going to become more and more important, is related to the precise estimation of N needs. This is nitrous oxide loss as it relates to N application. Chris Van Kessel showed some data like this just yesterday. Once you exceed the crop N demands, the losses go up significantly. We measured the same with leaching losses. Once you're above the crop demand, you're seeing tremendous losses. So the precise estimation of N needs is very important. So now there's multiple approaches. In New York, the traditional approach is sort of a mass balance approach. Many of the Midwestern states have gone to the maximum return to N approach. This is from the Iowa State website, where basically there is a response curve that's been developed from many site years of N response trials. And then based on price ratios, you can find an optimum N rate, okay? But this is, I would say, this is scientifically very defensible, but it's the opposite of the adaptive approach, because this sort of suggests that there is one optimum N rate for all the corn after corn, in this case, for the state of Illinois. But there is a recognition within that, and you, on the same website, you can just click through, you get even a distribution of the range, or actually the frequency distribution, of the optimum N rate. So in this particular case, the price ratio of 0.25, that's actually between 0 and 250. Okay, that's the range. Now, we would like to manage this variability. You know, we're not accepting that we cannot manage that, and because a lot of that variability has to do with factors that we can measure, okay, like organic matter content, weather-related factors, et cetera. So that gets us to adaptive nitrogen management. So these factors are important. So you can have a single recommendation for one state or several states, but you know, you need to take into account soil type effects like texture, drainage class, et cetera. Organic matter content, I just showed you how much that can change. Organic amendments, of course, are very important, and early season weather, which I'll talk about, is a very important factor. We found that out certainly in the Northeast this year. Then mid and late season weather is also important, especially if you get drought stress and basically unattained yield potential. More difficult to manage, I guess. Perhaps you could do some of that, but it's more difficult. One thing we need to keep in mind, that at the beginning of the growing season, and certainly in the preceding fall, you cannot be precise about predicting N needs. It's inherently going to be imprecise because the early season weather and some of the crop management implications haven't basically worked themselves out. I've shown this slide many times. I apologize to those of you who have seen it before, but this is one of the key issues. This shows for a time from, this is basically the growing season, the amount of nitrate in the soil. This is the mineralization that occurs. The curve may change depending on weather conditions, if it's cooler or warmer spring. And this is the uptake by the maize plant. And ideally, you sort of get maybe 40 to 60% of your nitrogen from the soil organic matter, that's discounting manure or something like that, and the rest you make up with fertilizer. Now there's this time period where you have quite a bit of nitrate in the profile that's subject to leaching and denitrification prior to the corn having taken that up. And if you get a lot of rain, like we did in the Northeast this year, you lose a lot of that, and your fertilizer supplement needs to be much higher. So this is critical time period in the late spring that affects the optimum N rate. And that's one of the primary sources of this variability that we saw in the optimum N rate in the Illinois example. If you have a lot of manure, you of course get a lot more mineralization, often maybe even more than the maize uptake, but you can still have the same pattern. So you may have this odd situation like we saw this year and a few years ago, where actually plenty of nitrogen was applied through organic sources, but you still ended up having a deficit. Most important thing is, in terms of communicating, is that farmers understand that this doesn't mean that next year you should put on more nitrogen. They have to put it in the context of the weather conditions of the particular growing season. So just to sort of indicate how variable this precipitation is, this is from Iowa. We had a very similar situation in the Northeast. This shows radar estimated precipitation for the state of Iowa late June, early July. Just want to point out there are areas here that had more than 12 inches of rain in a 30-day period. And you would go over maybe 5-10 miles to the south, and yet areas that maybe got 2 to 3 inches of rain. So if precipitation is important, then having good precipitation estimates is important. So what are some of the tools that we might use then for adaptive N management? Well, we have some preseason tools like preplant N test, PMN test, but they have limited precision because the growing season hasn't played out yet. Then there are some early season tests like the PSNT or the LSNT, which really attempts to incorporate some of these early season weather impacts, but it is inherently somewhat imprecise for reasons that we can discuss later. There's a lot of new technology on leaf sensing, satellite, proximal sensing. You see some of them downstairs in the exhibition. For corn, I haven't really seen any really convincing data that it works very well, but I would assume that those tools are going to be worked out. One of the disadvantages, Tracy always mentioned that, is when you use this kind of technology, you have to be out in the field first to know whether you have a deficiency or not. You have to make the expense in either case. And then, of course, there's some very useful postseason tests that we've already heard discussed, whether it's a stock nitrate test or a residual N test. But of course, it only allows you to do the hindsight evaluation. Very useful, as long as you put it in the right context. So we use a modeling approach. Why? Because models allow you to incorporate all the relevant processes, okay, and the complexity of that. It allows for adaptive approaches based on variable soils, whether it's genetic variability or dynamic variability, like the case of the grain versus the dairy farm, variable management, planting date, organic additions, populations, you name it, and then variable weather. Okay, and we use high-resolution climate data. The other aspect is low cost. Once you've developed the infrastructure, our AdaptN tool is basically free. Okay, you don't have to go out in the field even. So this is the infrastructure we've developed. Using the Northeast Region Climate Center, we now have high-resolution climate data, 4x4 kilometer, available for the entire northeastern United States. Next year, also, several of the Midwestern states. Those data are being stored on a SQL server at the Cornell Center for Advanced Computing. And then the PNM model, which is the model that Jeff developed, can be run in real time using stakeholder input. So you can actually then generate a nitrogen recommendation for corn in real time by providing some basic information and then running the model for the early season. Thank you. This is a picture of the 4x4 kilometer high-resolution climate data, and because precipitation is extremely variable, it is important to have high-resolution climate data. So the approach is you provide some basic information, including latitude and longitude, because that accesses the high-resolution climate data, and then other soil and tillage information, information about organic inputs, past manure applications, rotations, etc., and then some fertilizer and crop information, date of planting, previous, starter fertilizer and those kind of things. This is the front page if you access the model. And I'm just showing you one of the input pages. This is the one for manure and organic inputs. You probably can't read it, but here, this table here shows you you enter the manure information. So up to 3 years, Jeff, 2 years, 3 years. Also rotation, are you rotating out of sod or soybean? So also some of the basic information is being supplied. Probably takes about 2 minutes to do that. Then you run the model and you get the result. It basically spits back what you input so that you can check it. And then here's a recommendation. In this particular case, it says 125 pounds per acre of nitrogen. And then you have the option, and Jeff set this up very nicely, to click on the modeling results, the simulation results. And this is, for example, this shows for the season the N losses. Now this gets to the question that was asked by Jerry Lemunyan. So you can show someone, look, in the late spring of 2009, you lost about 70 pounds per acre of nitrogen, okay, in this particular scenario. Now, estimated from model simulations. So how can you use this? Well, it can be through CiTRES-N recommendations for split applications. If you want to put most of the nitrogen on at planting, use a conservative initial rate, maybe in 1 out of 4 years. If you have a wet year, you may have to put a little bit of additional nitrogen on. 1 minute, I'll be. Manured fields, interpreting a PSNT value, for example. Is it low because you had a lot of precipitation, or is it low because you had low mineralization because of cool spring conditions? And retrospective evaluation. So you can even combine it with a stock nitrate test and find out, well, why was it high or why was it low? We're trying to bring this now to the next level using the Veris spectroscopy equipment to estimate organic carbon. This is in collaboration with Dave Laird in Ames, Iowa, to basically bring a spatial-temporal component to it. But that's still very much in the research phase. But I should say that with the modeling approach, it's also been fairly slow progress. And we really need to go back and sort of bring in that mindset and the human component, because it's a fairly significant leap for most people. The idea that you might use a model to get useful information for end management is something that people aren't used to. So in conclusion then, management-induced soil change reduces the applicability of the more generalized management recommendations. Adaptive management is adapting to the localized conditions. And also, it requires good data and good knowledge to do this well. So I hope with those two examples that I gave you some idea of where we're trying to go, and we're still struggling with bringing the technology and the mindset together. Thank you, Jorge.
Yeah, I want to thank Harold, and there will be time for questions later on.